And our special guest, Dr. Saul Miller, as we talk about his performance as a psychologist and motivating teams and people. And we will be back with your calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Dr. Saul Miller with us. We'll take calls this hour. Maybe your own stories you can share with us as well. Dr. Miller, fascinating discussion with you tonight, my friend.
It's a pleasure, George. You know, I was thinking about one story that's interesting. Many years ago, Lee Iacocca, when he was the head of Chrysler, approached Vince Lombardi, you know, the legendary Green Bay Packers coach.
Right.
And he asked Vince, what makes a winning team? And Vince said three things. First of all, the players have to know their job. I mean, there's no nonsense. You've got to know what you have to do and be able to do it.
Yep.
Second, he said, the we has to be bigger than the me. And third, and this is beautiful, he said, the players have to love one another. He didn't mean they had to like each other. He meant they had to respect each other. And that's such a key word in a winning team, is this sense of respect. I may not like the guy in the next stall, but I'm going to respect that he's going to do his job so I can do my job, and then the team will do what it has to do.
Well, Iacocca was a genius. Yeah, he just passed away, but I remember him when he was at the Ford Motor Company, because I come from Detroit, Saul, and he did a great job coming up with the Mustang and making that work for Ford. And then he went on to run Chrysler and saved Chrysler from falling apart.
Yeah, well, I mean, the man, and he had the sense to go to somebody in another discipline and completely in sport and ask him, you know, what does it take to win? But I think that thing about respect, I think good teams, George, the players respect the game. They respect the world in which they live. They respect the process, what it takes to be successful, and they respect each other. And what we see now, I mentioned just at the break, we see really eroding values. I don't want to say a complete lack of respect, but a significant lack of respect and a lack of honesty and a lack of kindness. It's shocking. Really.
It's all over the place. Let's take some calls here. Let's start with Mike in Connecticut to get us started. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Yeah, I wish everybody could play the game of baseball, because the guests will probably agree with me that baseball is a game of failure.
Well, that's true. I mean, you hit 3 times out of 10, and you're a star. So you're right. You have to be able to learn to deal with the failure.
Well, that's true. Go ahead, Mike. I'm sure you have a little more.
You still there?
Yeah.
I was going to say that my father was a big influence on me as far as baseball, and I got the attitude not to give up. There's certain pitches you can't hit right this day, but you may hit them next week or next year.
You got to swing at them or you won't hit them.
You got to step
all about
up there.
Attitude.
That's
you
true.
You got to step up there with the idea, I'm going to hit the ball. I love to hit the ball. I mean, you got to step up with that mindset. If you start thinking, well, I'm only going to get one hit in a while, no, you can't think that way. As a matter of fact, the more you think when you step up to the plate, the less you perform. It's just reacting. But I love to hit the ball as a feeling. You bring that kind of feeling to it.
Saul, I'm told that a lot of great professional sports athletes have the ability to mentally slow down things, whether you're a hockey player, football player, baseball player, that they have the ability to slow down the pitch coming at them mentally in their head. Or, you know, the hockey player who's about ready to take a pass from someone, the puck is really slow in his head, and he just gets it like it sticks to his stick. But they've got this ability to do that. And apparently every successful player has had that ability.
Well, I think people talk about the flow state, getting into a state where you're just totally into it. And when you're into it, it almost feels as if things are slowing down. I mean, I've worked with quarterbacks in the NFL. They basically have three and a half at the most seconds to throw the ball. And if they're feeling pressure, those 3 seconds feel like 2 seconds. And if they're feeling confident and they're in touch with their emotions, those 3 seconds feel like maybe 3.5 or 4. And the difference in terms of your ability to read the game between seeing the game as 2 seconds or 4 seconds is huge. And again, breath and thought are two key things to help people excel. And funny situation, some years ago I was working with a baseball team, and one of the stars of the team, all-pro guy, said to me, he was a little reluctant. I was approaching him to do some work, and he was a little reluctant because he really was a fundamental Christian, and he was a little concerned that maybe what I was teaching was a little bit out of the box, maybe it wasn't kosher. So I said to him, the Gospel of John begins with, in the beginning was the Word. And I said, that's all we're dealing with. The Word is thought and breath. Thought and breath. And then he thought about it for a moment. He said, okay, man, sounds good. Let's do it. And so it's getting people into that sense of just taking a breath, drawing power to them, getting that energy flowing through them. And you're right. It gives them a sense of things slowing down. They see things better and they think more clearly.
How long does it take to turn a team around or an individual where you seeing results?
I think you can turn an individual around in one or two sessions.
That's not bad.
I mean, that's happened. I had a player one time as a goalie in the National Hockey League, and he was a pretty good goalie, but he threw up before every game. He was just, you know, so emotional.
His nerves, you mean?
Yeah.
Wow.
And within two sessions, that never happened again. And it was unnecessary. It was stressful to him. I mean, I think he performed better without it. But with teams, it does take, I mean, you're dealing with a group of individuals, you know, a disparate group, and it takes more time. I had a situation with a team in Switzerland a couple of years ago, professional team, where the team was in ninth place, top eight make the playoffs. There was 4 games left in the season. I flew over there, and they had a talented team. They had the talent, but they were all coming from different places. I mean, I met with the leadership group. There was 8 players on the team. I always work with the leadership group. I call it the captain's group. And one guy might not like another guy. And I said, that's irrelevant. What's relevant now is that we come together, we pull our energy together, we focus on what can we do to be the best we can be. And they put aside their negative thoughts, they put aside their personal thoughts, and got more into the we has to be greater than the me. And we ended up squeaking into the playoffs, won the first round, and went on to win the championship. So that was fortunate. I mean, that was something. They had enough talent. I have an even more amusing story. I was working with a team. Coach called me in. His team had played. They were playing in the playoffs. It was a single-game knockout. And he said to me, we've played the team that we're playing twice during the season, and we lost both games badly. So the players really don't think that we can win. Is there something you can do to help us? So the coach had been a former client of mine. I came down, I spent the day with the team, and I said to them, you know, reality is, talent-wise, they may be better than us. They may be deeper than us. But I tell you this, if we can perform like a pack of wolves, if we are offensive and aggressive in the offensive end and we're hunting like a pack of wolves, if we are defending as a pack of wolves, if every time we shift, the next group goes on, they start hunting, we can win the game. And the guys got into it. I mean, it made no sense.
Did they get it, though? Did they understand it?
Yeah, absolutely. We knocked off this team that had significantly outscored us. So that was one day where you were just kind of manipulating a mindset. And
do these results, even though you've done this for so many years, do they still surprise you when you see them work?
You know, George, I love to do this. And I think one of the reasons or something that helps me to be successful with it is really the passion I have for it. Just like I'm sure if we talk about the success of Coast to Coast over the years, and I've been a listener for years.
Thank you.
It's the passion that you've had in doing it. It comes across, you know. And so when people have a passion for it and you can enroll the group that you're talking to, I mean, what I do, there's two parts. One is having the technology that actually helps people perform. And the other thing is being able to enroll them in believing what you say.
Well, what's also great is to have, as part of your team, the ability for the team members to pick you up when you think you're going to fall.
For sure.
And that helps, too.
I mean, we would be talking there about chemistry, you know?
Exactly.
The group where they have each other's back. And somebody once said, I think it was Kipling, wrote years ago, that this is the law of the jungle. As old and as true as the sky, and the snakes that keep it will and the wolves that keep it will prosper, and the wolves that break it will die. Like the big snake girdles the tree trunk, this law runs forward and back. The strength of the pack is the wolf, and the strength of the wolf is the pack. So when you have that group behind you, it really empowers you.
Next up, let's go to Mark, driving in Iowa. Welcome to the program. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
How you doing, sir?
Great. Thanks.
Pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you.
I've come of a feeling in my life that there's like 6 or 8 people in the world, and we've all met them all. You know, I'm the guy that runs his mouth all the freaking time, but I woke up 2 hours early for work, and I'm going on to work. I'm going to sleep in the parking lot. So, you know, I mean, there's that guy. There's the guy that tries to tear everybody else down. There's or gal, you know, throw it in there, but. But I think there's like 6 or 8, and I suppose it'd be archetypes or whatever, but I ain't that smart. Obviously, I used ain't in a sentence. But I think there's 6 or 8 people in the world, and that's it.
Well, I guess if that's the case, then you want to hang with those who have the archetypes of let's make something happen. Let's support each other and do something extraordinary.
You know, when you watch these TV reality shows like Shark Tank and things like that, you know, a lot of people there are very successful.
Mm-hmm.
And the people on the program are trying to get those successful people to invest with them and help them and everything mm-hmm. else. Do you think all of them have these capabilities, these traits?
I think some of them do, George. I certainly do. I think some of them have a sense of positive sense of self. I think that they're committed to doing what it takes to make them successful. I think part of the reason that people are successful is because they have a passion for what they do, and they're willing often to pay the price, do what's necessary to achieve. Now, sometimes they don't care about other people, and that's the sad reality.
Let's go to Joe, Long Island, New York. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
I saw 2 questions on the sports. You know, I think of Lance Armstrong, you know, the Tour de France or someone like that. You get out to the front, you take the lead, and even if you're confident, even if you're really good, it must wear on you to say, okay, I'm a minute ahead, I'm 2 minutes ahead, but someone might be catching me, as opposed to, say, someone that's doing a 300-meter dash in the Olympics where there's not enough time to let that psychology kind of get into your head and where you might almost just be overthinking. So I'd ask you about that. Another example with that would be like Tiger Woods. You know, he's got people, you know, staring him down while he's putting and, you know, cameras and TV on him, you know, so, and it's a long game. It's a long day. Now, my second question would be about business. Okay, now, an example would be, recently there was something that they said there's a lot of infighting in Google between divisions. So people are, you know, basically having fights at work between divisions among themselves. Now, doesn't that hurt the work atmosphere after a while, and also erode a person's personal walk with other stuff, such as sports? So you worked at Google, and then you went out and tried to write your books and help people with sports psychology. Wouldn't that affect you negatively if you were fighting with people all day at work, you know?
Well, I mean, in response to the last thing, absolutely. I mean, our feelings affect our thinking. And if you're feeling tense, if you're feeling defensive, if you're feeling frustrated with, you know, having to deal with certain people, I mean, it has a negative impact on your energy. And all we're really talking about is energy. We're talking about people expressing their power. So, of course, negativity, which often ties into fear, limits performance. Now, as far as the first question goes, I've worked with cyclists. I wrote a book about cycling at one time. The people who are marathoners, the people who are road racers in cycling, they're not worried about what's behind them. I mean, they're somewhat conscious, but they are totally focused on going forward. It's always thinking more. And there's a great story about Greg LeMond, who was the first American to win the Tour de France. And LeMond, shortly after he won the Tour, he was hunting in California, and his brother-in-law, who was hunting with, accidentally shot him.
Oh, God.
And he ended up having surgery, had a whole bunch of pellets in him, shotgun pellets in him, and returned almost a year later to compete again. And people who saw him compete said he looked kind of like death warmed over, didn't look like the man he was previously. But in his first competitive race back, there was a breakaway group, small group of riders that broke away from the peloton, from the big group, and there was LeMond with the leaders. And so I was working with the Canadian cycling team preparation for the Olympics, and I said, how do you think it was possible that LeMond was with this group and being in that, you know, state that he had been in? And the answer that we came up with was, because that's who he thought he was. That's where he belonged. So the mindset of some of these people who are extraordinary athletes or extraordinary performers in different fields too, is they think they can. They think that's where they belong, and they can overcome physical limitation at times.
I was not born during World War II, Saul. I came over a little bit after that. But I would guess that this country was very close and not too divided during that war, that they came together as a nation. What do you think?
Absolutely, George. I think, and you know, if you were to say, what is it that brings people together? What is, you know, the unifying goal? Or what is the, and I think we mentioned Kennedy before. It's somebody who can inspire people to think of joining the group, joining the movement. And unfortunately, sometimes what brings people together is an external threat. I mean, when 9/11 happened, certainly people came together in America. And if we knew that a comet was coming that was going to threaten the planet, internationally people would come together to kind of work together to solve the problem. So sometimes we need an external thing to bring us together, but absolutely. I think values in America back at the time of the Second World War were much healthier. I think today, you know, one of the symptoms of things, the self-centeredness of the times, is the selfie. I mean, people have a selfie to take pictures of themselves, for God's sake. So it's, what is that saying? It's like, it's about me. It's not about the we. It's not about the team. It's about, you know, what's in it for me. Too much of that going on.
Gina Maria in the state of Washington. We'll get to you after the break, of course. We've got a few more callers for our final segment coming up. But Gina, you'll be our first person, so just hang there. Dr. Saul Miller's website is saulmiller.com. It's his name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And his book we're talking about tonight is Why Teams Win. But you can apply that to just about anything we do in life. George Norrie back with you, along with Dr. Saul Miller. Our final segment here as we talk about his life as a performance specialist, consulting in sport, business, and healthcare, and how you can apply it to your own life. And it's not that difficult to apply, Saul, is it?
No, it's not, George. It really isn't. You know, a couple of simple things that I would give to a coach to help him or her perform better could apply to a parent. And one very simple thing, Ken Blanchard wrote about it years ago in One Minute Manager. He said, critique the behavior, not the person. I mean, you know, and we don't see much of that today. We see people saying incredibly negative things about people. But if you want to change people's behavior, critique the behavior. Don't undermine the person. And another thing that I learned from a friend of mine, Bill Walker, who was a wonderful high school wrestling coach, state champion coach in Illinois, retired many years ago. Bill said to me one time, when the athlete understands that the coach is more concerned with their success, the athlete's success, than his own success, they'll do anything for that coach. And again, we sometimes see coaches who their me is bigger than the team's we.
That's true.
Of course, doesn't work.
When you came up with these 9 traits, was it trial and error?
Well, I think, it's interesting. It was just reflection. It was just sitting down and thinking about why do certain teams win? And then after doing this stuff for 30 years, you begin to understand what are the qualities that really help groups of people perform better. And so it just kind of came. Now, mind you, it took a couple of years to write the book. But I was fortunate that my son was a great editor. My wife was a great editor. I keep giving it to them to read, and my son would shake his head and say, needs a little work, Dad. And eventually, though, we crystallized enough of this information and tried to put it in a way that was very readable to people.
Let's go to Gina Maria in the state of Washington, as promised. Hi, Gina. Go ahead.
Hi. Peace and love and God bless to everyone and everything everywhere.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have an idea to save lives all over the world, and I would like the gentleman's advice after I tell my story.
All right.
I told you this before a long time ago, George. On July 1st, 2006, I was almost murdered on a boat and fought for my life for 7 hours or so. I went on the boat with my boyfriend at the time and his friend. Soon my boyfriend took over driving and the boat, and he tried to pop me out of the back, knowing that I cannot really swim and I have fibromyalgia. My muscles would have seized up and I would have drowned.
Nice boyfriend. Jeez.
Crazy. His friend realized what he was doing and had to wrestle back control of his boat.
The friend didn't want any part of this, right?
Well, the friend was shocked that he was doing this.
Yeah. Who wouldn't be?
He liked me. I mean, I'm a nice, loving person, So it goes on where, and then after that, then he would strangle me over and over again and try to drag me by the throat over and out of the boat. Luckily, I knew how to break chokeholds from judo years ago, and the job I had at the time taught me to break chokeholds.
What's the friend doing at this point?
He's trying to counsel us and talk to us, and I'm trying to tell him, bring me back, and he's in a panic because of what his friend is doing, my boyfriend was doing to me at the time and stuff. So here comes the cool part.
You mean it gets better?
Well, because I came up with an idea to save lives all over the world from this while it was going on. So partway through this, through this several hours into it, I realized that there was no international nonverbal symbol or sign when one is in distress and needs help. So later when I was safe, I learned some words from American Sign Language and chose a word from American Sign Language. And it's the word cop. And you do this in sign language by you make a C with your right hand and you place it over your heart. That's where they wear their badge. And that means cop. And if you're ever kidnapped, held hostage in a bad situation, if everyone around the world knew this, and I want it taught different ways, if everyone around the world knew this, it didn't matter what language you spoke, you could do this symbol to a camera, to a person, to anyone. When someone has you kidnapped and held hostage, they can't watch you every single second.
Why don't you just yell it out?
Well, because you can get beat down for it. You can get killed for it at that moment. You have to try to do it secretly and discreetly, if you can, to try to get out of this situation. I mean, a boat came fairly close, and I yelled to that boat, and he after they were out of our sight, he tried to kill me again, and I had to fight for my life. I was getting tired. And then another boat came even closer, but I was too exhausted to yell.
How did you get out of this situation?
Well, I finally talked his friend into bringing me back to the dock. I lied, and I said I wouldn't tell anyone. And once I made it onto the dock, I started screaming bloody murder,
And what happened to the boyfriend? Was he arrested?
Well, I had to go to the hospital and stuff to make sure I didn't have a broken neck and such. But he eventually, they went back out in the water, you know, to Mukilteo, to the sound in Washington here. And so the cops had to wait for quite a while. But when they came back in, they got him. And he got, like, less than 3 months. And then he contacted me when he wasn't supposed to in jail and got 4 more months. And
why was he doing this to you?
He was on drugs. He was drinking on drugs.
All right, here we go.
Started off with him and his friend almost, they both clapped hands and said that they killed 2 other people in the past and gotten away with it. And so I think he thought he could just get away with it. And so I want this idea to get out. I've told it to police officers, to firemen. They love it. I've told it to the Coast Guard. He said it should be the 17th sign of distress on international waters. He said it's right there up there with SOS and Morse code.
Well, here's the problem I see with this. You better be really close to another boat for them to see this, because if they are off in the waters, they're not going to see you make a little C for cop or anything like that. But I don't know, Saul, do you get distress things like that?
No, I think it's a very unfortunate situation. It's not really what I'm dealing with.
Next up, we go to Michael in Greensboro, North Carolina. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Oh, hi, George. Great talking to you.
Thank you.
Anyway, I just wanted to talk about the topic at hand, please. Right now, the sun, astrology-wise, is in the sign of Libra, which is a team player sign. And, you know, it's important to be an individual, be yourself, be unique, be your own person, have your own sense of identity, what have you. But you also have to be considerate of others and show concern and sensitivity to, you know, others, their feelings, their wants, their needs, their desires. And I know some people that they're well-intentioned, but quite honestly, they're too eccentric. And that's kind of their downfall. You have to learn how to be yourself, but yet be a team player. And otherwise, you're kind of coming across unintentionally as sort of a rebellious, you know, teenager being stubborn and eccentric. There, have you, please.
Well, that's basically true, I would think, Saul.
Yeah.
Almost some of these techniques that you have just mentioned, he's mentioned himself.
Well, I think if it's any kind of team behavior, whether it's sport, business, whatever, the arts, I think the we has to be bigger than the me, and that means there has to be respect for others and people have to buy into the group direction.
Absolutely.
Respect is key.
Barry's in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Here's our old friend. Hi, Bear. Go ahead. You there? Barry?
There?
Yep.
Yeah, buddy. I got a great story for you and Saul, but let me quickly ask you, did you see the Braves and Cardinals game this afternoon?
Yes, I heard about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
quit trying to rub it in.
We robbed you of that win. But anyway, second of all, real quick, did you hear George Knapp on Coast to Coast last night?
No, it was my day off.
Oh, okay. He had a Calvin Parker, the guy that was abducted by UFOs.
Yep, along in Pascagoola.
Yep, and I told Donna Walker, I said, it's so good to hear somebody on Coast to Coast that sounds just like me.
Maybe it was you trying to trick us.
Well, no, I can't trick
but
you.
But anyways, get to the point here, Bear. We're running out of time.
No problem. Listen, I used to play in a card game, poker game, almost every Thursday night. And, George, if I went into that poker game with a good, positive feeling that I was going to win, I would win 7 out of 8 times. But if I'd have had a bad day at work or something, an argument with my wife, I'd almost always lose.
Yep,
somebody.
It's about attitude. Joseph Gallenberger with his book, Liquid Luck, is spot on when it comes to that, Saul.
Well, it's about attitude and it's about feeling. I think when people are stressed, you know, because it's been a tough day at work, things haven't been working out, they're not getting along with some people, it creates tension, it interrupts flow, it interrupts a kind of instinctiveness, it interrupts being in the zone, all of those things. The trick is learning how to get back into that good feeling zone when you've been knocked out of it by the circumstances that surround you. And again, it's thought, it's breath, it's imagery, and it's learning how to work with these things. I often tell the athletes, well, the people I work with, because some of them are entertainers, some of them are musicians, actors, I tell them that there's two parts to it. One part is understanding what we're talking about. It's understanding what these techniques are. And the other part is doing the work. You actually, I mean, it's the same thing if I went to the gym and I lift weights. If I went once, it wouldn't really have much significant change whatsoever. But if I go day after day with some really good technique, I become stronger. And it's the same thing mentally.
You know, this is not rocket science. Why don't most people do this?
Well, I guess they're so caught up in what's right in front of them instead of being able to see the bigger picture. And as I say, fear is a great limiter. It just shifts our sense of what's possible and who we are.
Let's go next to John in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Welcome to the program, John. Go ahead.
Hi, George and Dr. Miller.
Hey there, John.
I played professional baseball for a short time, and the main thing that scared me more than anything else was getting hurt. Mm-hmm. I was hurt several times playing, but that was always in the back of my mind that I was going to get hurt. But it never really affected my playing because I knew I had eight other ball players out there. I had the support. But it was always in my mind, and I never could get rid of it.
Let me ask you a question. When you the fear of getting hurt, was it at the plate, getting hit with the ball? Was it running? Was it where were you?
No.
Where was that concern?
No, I was a catcher. And one thing that bothered me probably more than anything else was throwing the ball to second base.
Mm-hmm. And getting that runner, right?
Yeah, but hitting, it didn't bother me that much. Hell, I was never that good at hitting. I hit about 250, and I was tops for me. But anyway, the fear is one thing that, I took that with me every time I step out there on the field.
Well, fear, as I said earlier, fear is the great limiter. And, you know, you're not alone. I remember Steve Sachs, when he was with the Dodgers, second baseman, had trouble throwing the ball to first. And I worked with a pitcher who I best unnamed, and he hoped nobody would bunt because he had a fear of throwing the – this is a guy playing for the Dodgers. He had a fear of throwing the ball to first base. Dale Murphy was a great catcher and could not, just like yourself, could not make the throw to second base and ended up playing in the outfield. So when we start thinking about, I might throw it away, we interfere with that flow. And it takes some work. It takes some work getting people into a state of deep relaxation, getting them to see themselves making that play again and again and again, the right play, and eventually that fear kind of diminishes. But it's not uncommon. And as I say, fear and love. I love to make the play. I love the challenge. Gives you power. Don't mess up. Creates contraction.
What do you recommend that individuals, companies do listening to this program tonight, Saul, and they have all these issues within the company or within the individual?
Well, I think, George, we go back to the nine keys. I think it's really important that we redefine what our purpose is. We try and enroll people in the sense that what we're about is exceptional. I mean, we want to create a good product. We want to be profitable. We want to serve people. Getting people excited about it and leadership providing encouragement, direction, and positive feedback. Great quote is, praise does wonders for our sense of hearing. If we look for positive things, if we have positive eyes in the leadership role, then people want to perform well. They want the positive feedback. You got to have the right game plan. People have to understand what we're trying to do. We give them, as I said, positive feedback. I mean, these keys really apply. And I guess I'd encourage people to read the book, Why Teams Win.
You know, your next book should be for parents on how to use some of these techniques to have a better kid.
Good idea, George.
I mean, that would be a huge seller.
Yeah, good idea.
Plus, it'll get you back on the show.
I'd love to do that. You know, I had one thought I wanted to run by you.
Got about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
The situation right now where the polarization and divisiveness that exists on the political scene.
Oh, my God, yeah.
In Canada, on September 11th, they declared there was going to be a national election, federal election, which will take place on October 21st. So the actual period of electioneering is 6 weeks. In the United States, it's 18 to 20 months.
Way too long.
Yeah, and it's a prolonged period of political division. Social division.
Absolutely. And it continues, too. You know, I get your point. Maybe it should be much shorter, but I wish governments would implement these 9 points as well. Things would sure work better.